Shop the President's Day sale at Grand Appliance for unbeatable appliance deals and a hassle-free buying experience that includes fast delivery, expert installation, and personalized service from start to finish. Save now on top brands like LG with top-load washers starting at $5.99 and counter-depth max French door refrigerators starting at $18.99. Learn more at grandappliance.com or one of Grand's local showrooms in Indianapolis and Lafayette. That's Grand Appliance, appliance experts since 1930.
Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending, cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Touchdown! I don't believe it!
You're listening to the Best of the Browns. A weekly mix of 92.3, the fans' best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
Here's Hoyer bootleg rollout, rolling to the middle, stepping up. He's got Gabriel wide open. He's got it. First and goal.
Cleveland native, former Browns quarterback and Super Bowl champion Brian Hoyer on the Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima. We are Sports Radio 92.3 The Fan.
And it's our first installment with one of the greats, Brian Hoyer, who joins us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Getting ready for the draft coming up in late April. Brian, thanks for joining us today, my friend.
Ken, Anthony, great to be here with you guys. And, man, to be called a great, that's something I haven't heard in a while, and I appreciate you pulling up some of those old clips of here in the good old days. Hard to believe that's about 11 years ago now.
Do you know if that football is still in Canton from your come-from-behind record-setting victory on the road in Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, look, we went down and visited, and they had the archives, and it was pretty cool. We were actually going to practice against Detroit when I was playing in New England, and we went there. We stopped in Canton, did a little tour, and they said anything that's ever been kind of sent there about your career, you can always go and ask them, and they have it on hand. And so I've been able to go and see it. It's pretty cool until, you know, I was uprooted by my good friend Tom Brady in the Super Bowl 28-3 as well. So
I don't remember that game. I'll be honest.
It's a little more important than mine.
Brian Hoyer joining us now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So I want to start with Miles, and then we'll get into the draft and stuff like that. I've heard you on your SiriusXM show. You believe that the Browns should be openly shopping Myles Garrett. Is that correct?
Yeah, I kind of talked about it on my SiriusXM show as it's Jerry Maguire, help me help you. The Browns are in Deshaun Watson purgatory, and you have an opportunity to trade a guy who wants to be traded. And we had John Costco on from Pro Football Focus, and he mentioned you could probably get a Khalil Mack when he was traded from the Raiders to the Bears. You could get that type of deal from Myles Garrett, get a few first-round picks. You already have the second pick. Replace him with Abdul Carter if he's there. So I think, in a way, I know people get agitated. I know there's a lot of fans who say, oh, he's not loyal. look, Miles has been a tremendous player for the Browns, defensive player of the year, obviously a huge part of that community. But at a certain point, he wants to win. And I don't know how close the Browns are to getting to that point. I'm sure he sat there this year, watched Saquon Barkley go from the Giants to the Eagles and win a Super Bowl. And so, look, the money's great. But at a certain point, if you're a competitor, you want to be up there hosting that Lombardi Trophy. So I think, actually, Miles is doing the Browns a favor by asking for a trade, especially at this point in his career, where you could still get a few number one picks for him.
Brian Hoyer with us. He's going to be doing this every single Tuesday in the lead up to the draft. So what's hard, a hard pill to swallow for Browns fans, obviously, is we're sitting through a season where we thought we were in a Super Bowl window, and now you're out here advocating to trade Miles Garrett. It's a lot of the same stuff, Brian, that I've been saying over the last few weeks, but obviously from a fan perspective, it sucks. It sucks to have to lose somebody the caliber of Miles Garrett. Is there any chance that they could, you know, make this a situation that would be palatable for Miles, give him some sort of huge all-time non-quarterback guaranteed contract, and then this team that we thought was in a Super Bowl window last year, you stay healthy, maybe you can get back there this year?
Look, I think anything's possible, and I get it as a fan. Look, in the NFL, you aren't very good in the business if you're in the business of getting rid of good players. But when you look at what trading Herschel Walker did for the Dallas Cowboys, when you're in, and I reference it as Deshaun Watson purgatory, I just looked it up. He's the second largest cap hit in the league next year, and he's not going to play quarterback for you. That's a big issue, and so I don't know. Look, they're going to have to solve that issue to even be in the talks of making it to the playoffs. And so when I look at Miles Garrett, yes, he's your best player, but if you could pawn him and turn it into 3 or 4 or 5 really good players on your team next year, that's going to get you a lot closer to winning than paying him this astronomical amount of money. Now you're tied up with him in cap space. I just think for where the Browns are as an organization, maybe this is me being away from a distance, they need a lot of help. And him going and basically saying, look, trade me and get something for me, I think that offers you better options than keeping him and saying, well, hope we get healthy, hope we find someone that plays quarterback well enough to make a run for it.
Brian, how do you feel about the way that he went about his business? Now, his brother played in the NBA, so we talk about whether or not more NFL players are going to try to command that kind of leverage, even mm-hmm. though we know in this league they don't have a ton given the franchise yep. tag. So what'd you think about the way he went about doing it?
Yeah, I think it was interesting. You know, he said he consulted LeBron. He talked to Joe Thomas. Very interesting way. And I'll say this, you know, when I started playing in the NFL 15 years ago, trades were very rare. And now they've become more prominent. You see guys going and saying they want to be traded. That's the other thing, too. You don't want to hold a guy hostage. You want volunteers. You don't want hostages. And so to keep him and say, look, we're going to make things better, he's already kind of established that he wants to go. And so you want people who want to be in that building and be contributing to that success. And I think this just gets – there's few guys that could have leverage. He's one of the guys that is able to do those things. Really, when you think about it, a guy who's a defensive player of the year, a Tyreek Hill when he wanted to be traded from the Chiefs, certain quarterbacks can sit there and demand those things. It's very hard because when it's the best player and he wants those things, he does have more leverage than the average player, that's for sure.
Brian Hoyer joining us here on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So have you already thought about what you want the Browns to do at number two?
Well, I think a lot depends on what you do with Miles Garrett. If you trade Miles Garrett, you accumulate another number one pick this year, possibly a number one pick next year, maybe a few mid-round picks. If Abdul Carter's sitting there at two, which this is a big if, because Tennessee has said they want to draft the best available player, and right now I would say that's between Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter. So if you trade Miles Garrett away, and let's just say the Titans don't take Abdul Carter, you snatch him up quick, and then I actually saw, I think it was God, I can't remember what mock draft it was, but they had the Browns trading Miles Garrett to the Dallas Cowboys. And then they used that pick to draft, I think, Will Johnson from Michigan. So you solidify the other corner opposite of Denzel Ward. I think you just got to start thinking outside the box here to build this team. And one thing that I would say, too, and a lot of dominoes will have to fall, why don't you just call up Kevin Stefanski's old stomping grounds and see what they're going to do with J.J. McCarthy? Because if they end up re-signing Sam Darnold, which I think is a possibility, having talked to some people, especially up there in Minnesota, J.J. McCarthy would be the number one quarterback taken this year. So I think you got to start looking at multiple avenues here, because obviously, like you just said, the Browns have to address the quarterback position if they want any chance of being successful next year.
All right, Brian Hoyer joining us right now on the hotline. Great stuff. Obviously, you're pretty plugged in. You're hearing stuff from all over the NFL. So what are you hearing about Shedeur Sanders that is making you, or what have you seen on tape with Shedeur that is making you so hesitant for a team like the Browns at number two to take him if he's the guy and Cam Ward is out?
Yeah, I look at it as when you're going to draft the number two pick, in my opinion, you want to draft somebody who's going to have a huge role the following season. I don't know if Shedeur is that NFL ready. This isn't, look, he's played a lot of football, but this is not Jaden Daniels. This is a guy who started at a smaller university, went to Colorado, didn't have, you know, his team wasn't that successful. I think Shedeur has a lot of talent, but I don't know if you want to draft him number two, throw him out there to the wolves, so to speak, next year on a team that's trying to rebuild. I would rather take an Abdul Carter or a Travis Hunter who's going to make an impact on the game. And I also believe that there may be the opportunity, especially if you trade Myles Garrett to accumulate some picks. Maybe you trade back into the first round. Maybe there's a guy like Jackson Dart who's getting a lot of hype right now. I'm just starting to watch these guys. But the one guy that I would say to keep your eye on, and makes a lot of sense because he's already there in Ohio, is Will Howard, the quarterback from Ohio State. It's funny, my brother Brett, who listens to your show all the time, he asked me, you know, what do you think of Will Howard? And early in the year, I'm like, isn't this guy just a running quarterback from Kansas State? Well, when I watched the college football playoffs, this guy played his best football of the year when the games mattered the most. The most eyes were on him. And I get it. He had a lot of good talent around him. But when it mattered most, he delivered. And he's 6'4", 235. I think this is a guy who's going to rise up people's draft boards. The more he gets into these meetings at the Combine, people understand who he is as a person. He seems like to be a great leader from what I've seen and what I've read. So I think there's other ways you have to start to think about addressing the needs on this team, as opposed to let's just draft Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, because I don't think either one of those guys is going to be a Jaden Daniels type player next year.
I got to go back on something here. I don't know why Lyman did not follow up with you. So they could keep Sam Darnold in Minnesota and let go of J.J. McCarthy, or trade J.J. McCarthy, I have to say?
Well, I think they could do multiple things. They could let Sam Darnold walk. They could franchise tag him. They could sign him. They could sign him to a short-term deal, keep J.J. McCarthy and say, we'll let you compete, but maybe you're going to learn from Sam another year or two. Or you could – look, Sam Darnold's still young and had a tremendous season. I know a lot of people want to point out the last two games of the year, but prior to those last two games, I would say Sam Darnold was a top-five quarterback in the league. And also, we've talked a lot about it on my show on Sirius. Sam Darnold has to recognize, too, that he's finally found a landing spot that nurtures his talent, and he's got great surrounding cast, not only in the players but the coaches. So I think he will be very particular in what he chooses to do, as opposed to just saying, oh, I'm going to go to the highest payer. I think that he's going to be very meticulous in that, knowing that if he goes back to another bad organization, it could go back to where he was with the Jets or the Panthers. So I think that's one domino that is going to have to be seen, how that plays out. And if they re-sign him and they say, J.J. McCarthy, we may make him available. Well, wouldn't you want that draft capital by trading Myles Garrett to maybe have an extra number one to send to Minnesota, and you could get your quarterback that way? Because if you could get J.J. McCarthy over Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, I think everybody would say yes to that.
See, I would like to possibly, like, because my next question would be, like, Judas Priest, if J.J. McCarthy were available, would you use number two to take J.J. McCarthy and trade him to the Vikings? That might be a coup for all we know with the Vikings. I don't know how J.J. McCarthy's going to do.
Right.
But it's like, okay, if we're everybody's saying he'd be the first quarterback taken in this draft, right? If everybody's saying that, is there a possibility I could trade down to like the Raiders at six? They could trade up. They could take a quarterback here, and then I could get some extra picks and go ahead and take J.J. McCarthy off the hands of Minnesota, or like you said, with the Cowboys there a little bit later on. Could I do the same?
Right. I think anything's possible, and I think the more you're willing to explore the trade for Myles Garrett, the more your possibilities open up. I think you saying, no, we're not going to trade him. Well, now you know what you have. You have the number two pick, and what are you going to do with it? Maybe they fall in love with Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders and say, one of them's going to be there. I don't know that. I just, to me, I think when a guy says he's asking to be traded, he wants to go out and be on a contender. It's not like he's saying, I want to be traded anywhere. He wants to go somewhere that is going to be able to win in the next year or two. I think you work with him and say, okay, what's the list? Give us five teams that you'd be willing to go to. And then you call those teams up and you say, what's your best deal for Myles Garrett, Defensive Player of the Year, and go from there. But I think if you just say no and put your foot in the sand and say, we're not going to do that, you limit your opportunities to improve your entire football team.
So we have seen, Brian, in the last few years, with the Texans, it was C.J. Stroud, and last year in Washington with Jaden Daniels. You've seen rookie quarterbacks showing that maybe you don't need the most stable situation to walk into. Maybe you don't need to be babied. Maybe you can come in and take a team to the playoffs, when my whole life it seemed like that was really tough for QBs to do. In this Brown situation, a little different because you've got, you know, Joel Bitonio here on the offensive line. You've got Wyatt Teller. You've got a two-time head coach of the year. So you have the makings of what could be a decent situation. What does it take for a rookie quarterback? What kind of position can you put a rookie quarterback in that you can guarantee that type of success?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, those guys you mentioned are in rare air, right? C.J. Stroud was a tremendous player coming out of Ohio State, played in a lot of huge games there. And then when you look at Jaden Daniels' career, I think he started like 50-something games and went from Arizona State to LSU. So he's playing the top talent each and every week. And I also just look at those guys, the maturity and the calmness that they have and that they've played with has allowed them to, I would say, come in and execute from day one. I don't know if Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders are going to come in with that same ability. It's too early in this process to tell, and I would say they weren't I don't want to say statistically, because obviously Cam Ward broke the record for touchdown passes, but I just don't, when I watched the film of Jaden Daniels last year, I actually thought he was better than Caleb Williams, and I'm not just saying that. You can look it up. I talked about it on NFL Network and on up here covering the Patriots draft. So there's certain things, and when I watch both Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders, they play a certain style that requires them to move around, make plays with their feet, extend plays, and I just don't know. They're not as physically gifted when it comes to that as Jaden Daniels. Now, C.J. Stroud, to me, is a true pocket passer. He can run it if he needs to, but that you're not really seeing that. If I'm going to compare one quarterback in this draft to C.J. Stroud, it would probably be Jackson Dart. The more I've started to watch the film of him, he wants to play from the pocket. Now, he's athletic enough to pull the ball down and run or extend the play, but a lot of the times when I watch Shedeur and I watch Cam Ward, it's kind of like they're waiting for the play to break down so they can extend it, and they're not the most gifted athletes when it comes to that. They're not Lamar Jackson. They're not Jaden Daniels. They're not Josh Allen. So they have a unique style of playing, and I look at comparing them to Stroud and Daniels. These guys play within the pocket and then pull it down when they need to, as opposed to looking for that opportunity to escape the pocket.
So I have to put some on a headline. Is in this draft, is Jackson Dart QB1 for you then?
Not yet. I think I need to see more. I think obviously there's always going to be these people who come and climb the draft board. I do, when I watch Shedeur and I watch Cam Ward, I can see why people are high on them. They're big, strong guys. They can make a lot of throws, a lot of touch throws. I don't think they have the strongest arms. I think Jackson Dart, from watching the film, I would say has a stronger arm. But I there's a lot that goes into it. So the more that we get into this the next few weeks, the more I start to watch the film, the more we see of them at the combine. Do they throw? Do they not throw? Do they test? I think all of those things will go into it. But the one thing I would say about Jackson Dart was he's playing in the SEC, which is a lot different than the ACC. And God, I don't even what conference is Colorado even in right now. So he's playing much better talent. And I would say when I've watched them, and now honestly, when I type in their names, it's all highlights. I haven't been able to get there and watch their bad plays yet, so I have to pull up the film. But Jackson Dart to me seems more of a pro-ready quarterback because of his willingness to sit in the pocket, stand in there, make throws. That's what the NFL is really about.
tough talking Brian Hoyer.
Shador Sanders, hater right now on the hotline.
I'm not hating him. And trust me, one of my favorite memories as a Cleveland Brown was when we beat the Bengals on Thursday night and Shador's dad, Dion, who was probably my favorite player because, as you guys know, growing up, the Browns weren't there. So I liked players, and I loved Dion. And he was up there on that NFL Network post-game show, and he was pumping me up. And so I'm not a hater. I think I need to see more. I think a lot of it is his name, and the more we see of him when it goes through this process – Someone will fall in love with him, and he will be drafted in the first round. There's no doubt about it. But the number two pick, I don't know if that's what you want to do with that pick.
This is awesome. Brian, we thank you very much for the time. We're already looking forward to next Tuesday, my friend. Take care.
All right, you guys too. See ya.
Brian Hoyer on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He joins us every Tuesday at 9.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
If you love your phone, but not your carrier, just switch to T-Mobile. You can keep your phone, keep your number, and we'll help pay it off up to $800 per line. You can also use our savings calculator to compare our plans and streaming benefits against Verizon and AT&T. So, switch and keep your phone, keep your number, and keep more of your moolah at T-Mobile.com.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, port in 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
45 minutes away from 2 second trivia. Do you want to tell everybody what they could win? I bet you don't know off the top of your head, so I'm going to have to say it because it's not my cup of tea, but it's a lot of people's cup of tea.
I tell you.
He don't know. He don't know. Don't even guess because I don't want you saying something.
Yeah, don't guess. You're way off. I can tell in your eyes.
Guys, you can win Luke Bryan tickets coming up at 7:45.
I knew it.
With
good
2 second
Luke
trivia.
Bryan.
And that famous song he has, right, Lyman? Go ahead.
Now, that's not the one that does the cover of the Tracy Chapman, right?
No, that's a different guy.
That's a different guy.
What's the Tracy Chapman
song?
That's
Luke Combs, Fast Car.
Fast Car, yeah.
You got a fast car. Yeah, I've heard that while walking
you
around in an apartment store.
You will not hear that if you win these tickets.
No. Yeah, you won't hear that. You'll go to see Luke Bryan.
Does Luke Bryan do covers of people covering?
He does a cover of Luke Combs singing the Honeycomb song.
We have this thing called the Spoolin' Party with my buddy every year because my buddies are bass fishing guys. They compete in tournaments. It's so annoying to go fishing with them. They do not put weights in fish. Are those guys still doing time? No, they can't still be doing
time.
You think
they're out?
That was some years ago. Hopefully they've turned their lives around. It's never too late to mend. I'm going to get to that here in a second. I went to the spooling party where they get their rods and reels and all that stuff ready. And usually they have the Bassmaster Classic on in the background. And I remember we were at my buddy's house and it was nothing but like a playlist of Luke Bryan videos. And they are very hokey videos. And I'm like, this is, and I did not, it's just not my cup of tea. But I know a lot of people, they looked at me like I was the idiot. So again, you guys all like it. You guys can win tickets to go see Luke Bryan. Have a good time. You guys can all go see him. You're going to like him. Go ahead and go watch and enjoy the music. But for me, but you could win 2 second trivia coming up at 7:45.
Yeah, answer some two questions to win. Let me get some hockey in there this week.
I'm sorry.
Let me get some hockey in there this week.
We're gonna get some hockey in here coming up at 7:20. I'm just gonna let you know about that. But I have to get to the Miles. Is the relationship with Miles repairable? Before you answer, here's Albert Breer yesterday on Afternoon Drive about that QB need and how it could compare with Miles.
I think there are a few teams like this. They're sort of in that no man's land at quarterback. And, you know, it's why like a guy like a Matthew Stafford, even Rodgers, like could wind up becoming valuable this offseason because it would be a way to shortcut that quarterback question. But I think it's a real question for the Browns. Like, it's a very real one. It's like, can we get good enough fast enough to compete for a championship while Myles Garrett is still in his prime?
Wait a minute. Breer just mentioned Matthew Stafford. I was told on the internet last week I shouldn't even waste anybody's time.
Pipe dream radio.
It was a pipe dream, by the way, and it still is a pipe dream because I do happen to agree with the person who tweeted at you that Matthew Stafford might fake his own death before he plays for the Cleveland Browns, but that's neither here nor there. What Albert Breer is pointing out is that the quarterback position is obviously very, very important. I keep going back to what Zach had written. Did he or did he not, when we talked about this yesterday in the article that Zach had wrote, did he or did he not meet with the Cleveland Browns and actually the Browns laid out a plan? Probably not most of their plan, because you can't trust him to not go telling people, especially sure, when he did the media car wash. Who the hell knows what a player's going to tell you? That's just irresponsible. It's an irresponsible thing to do. They wouldn't do that. But they might lay out that, yeah, we have these plans to go about maybe this way or that way, but we can't necessarily tell you because it's our plan and things can change. You got to make, got to have two to tango. And this could have been something that he'd been thinking about since December. Is this relationship repairable with the Cleveland Browns and Myles Garrett? And if it is, how do you do it? Because there's so many times where I sit there and think, man, I think in realism, it might just be too far gone. That once you say you want to trade, and it's nothing personal against Myles, not at all. This has been a roller coaster of a ride. He's had a brilliant career here. I want it to end amicably. But I think that a lot of people are like, you know what, we've done it to its end. It's the restaurant and Goodfellas. It's time to bust it out. It's time to bust this thing out and get the picks and let's get going here. I think that there's so many things. I'm hard pressed to find a realistic scenario, Tone, where it's like, okay, now you have to stay. Now you absolutely have to sign an extension and stay with this football team.
I mean, the day that it came out that he issued the press release to everybody about him wanting the trade, yeah, my mind went to, okay, he's played his last game as a Cleveland Brown. Now, more time has elapsed. He then went down to the Super Bowl, reiterated it, and basically talked about teams he might go to.
Yes.
When he was asked. You know, you had people like Mina Kimes provoking, saying, what about the Washington Commanders? What about this team? So now Miles is actually talking about other quarterbacks and how much he likes other quarterbacks. But, you know, there hasn't been any actionable date yet, right? There hasn't been a drop dead date of you got to meet a deadline if you're the Browns or Myles Garrett. And we're not really going to have that for a long time, right? Because you're going to have OTAs, the voluntary OTAs. You're going to have, you know, the mini camps. You're going to have the training camp. And as we get to each one of those steps, we'll see how noisy it gets, because Miles now did his Super Bowl junket. He's probably vacationing now. I don't know what he's doing. When are we going to hear from Myles Garrett again?
It'll be a while.
Well, or is
he shows up at the combine and starts giving interviews.
Right,
that'd be something.
Right. Is he going to show up places?
Might have to fly back for that one.
To try to keep his name in the news. If he does that, every day he starts doing that stuff,
you're going to start getting annoyed. And then you're going to say, All right, get the hell out of here.
Yes. Then it will definitely be the end, because the fans will sever their relationship with him.
I don't want this to get ugly.
Do you think the fans have severed their relationship with Miles yet?
I want to ask them. 216-474-0092. I don't think that they have yet.
Because there's
I'm seeing more and more negativity.
Sure. A little more negativity. But I haven't seen the burning of the Myles Garrett jerseys yet, even for show.
Well,
even from the usual suspects.
Yeah, but if he goes in as a Hall of, he goes into the Hall of Fame first ballot, you're going to want to wear your Myles Garrett jersey unless he wins a Super Bowl with somebody else.
That's interesting, right? Because when LeBron,
well, you can't burn your.
LeBron came back.
Well, people wish they would have had
those jerseys back? The two that were burned. Do they wish they would have
money? You can set it on fire all you want. It's not. I've defended jersey burning. I don't think it's repugnant or nasty. It's your money. Set it on fire. I don't care. Go ahead.
So the reason I asked the question is I don't feel that the fan side of this has been fractured so much that he can't come back. Now the question is on the other side, the Miles side of it. You know, can the Browns repair that? Can Miles repair it? It's a two-way street, right? Yep. Like, it's not just one side. He has not really done all the mudslinging that he could do. He has not talked bad about the organization.
Well,
he just doesn't like the window of the plan,
yeah,
the time frame of the plan.
He doesn't think that they could win now. I beg your pardon. I think the scenario that would have to play out is the most unrealistic scenario of it, is that Matthew Stafford would have to become available, as Albert Breer had said. And I think that that's, you're really pulling teeth there, because then I think Sean McVay has to have a trick up his sleeve to make that team. It was a competitive football team. It was a playoff team this year. So you have to have a trick up your sleeve to keep that team competitive, because Sean McVay doesn't want to waste his time. He's Teflon. If you were to get a guy, say you were somehow able to wheel and deal and you end up with Matthew Stafford, and Matthew Stafford is somehow amenable to playing with the team, if Miles still wanted to leave, I think that I would turn on Miles. To me, if Aaron Rodgers comes here, that's not enough for me to tell Myles Garrett, you need to stay and sign an extension and stay with this football team. It's not enough. Is Aaron Rodgers enough for you? You can go down the list of the guys that are possibilities. How about this? I don't think that they can afford him. I think he's priced himself out of, what are they, $36 million over the cap right now? And I know that things change, right? Is Sam Darnold from Minnesota? I disagree with what Brian said. I read the article from ESPN over the weekend. I do think I agree with Kevin Seifert, because I've been thinking this way since their season ended in the playoffs. They have several players that they'd like to pay, not named Sam Darnold. They can try to throw the franchise tag on him, but I think they're going to throw their franchise tag on someone else, like Byron Murphy, like what Kevin Seifert had wrote. So if they throw it on somebody else and Sam Darnold becomes available, and you were able to get him, is Sam Darnold enough for you to say, Miles, you need to go back on this. You need to sign with this football team.
This is why we want to know how realistic Miles is, because Sam Darnold was a top five quarterback for most of the year last year and then fell apart those last two games.
You could be a playoff team with Sam.
But, right. Oh, absolutely you could. Is Miles Garrett, like, demanding to play with either the top five teams in the NFL or the top five quarterbacks? Is he going to be unrealistic? Because then we might not be able to make a trade happen. Like Philadelphia, we brought up Philadelphia because I heard some people say, what about Philadelphia? That's a trade partner that could make sense. First of all, it would suck for the Browns because it's the end of the first round. You know, whatever picks you get are going to be bad picks. Second of all, you know, realistically.
If
I'm Philadelphia, why would I want that when we just won a championship without Myles Garrett, now I have to bring someone in that's going to make me have to get rid of a bunch of players?
I'll go a step further. If Myles Garrett ends up as a Philadelphia Eagle to start this next season, my first thought is that we didn't get enough. My first thought is that we didn't get all we could.
I totally agree.
Kansas City, I think they operate from a position of power. I think that they feel, and maybe Owen disagrees, but I think he's going to agree, Kansas City can get to the Super Bowl or to the AFC Championship and keep going with this because they have Patrick Mahomes and they have confidence in Andy Reid and Brent Veach. I think that Detroit, because of the money that they paid Aiden Hutchinson, is still going to be a candidate, is still a possibility, because the window's open and they were not a successful franchise for a very long period of time. The team that I would think that you would be able to say we got the most for would be Buffalo, because it's their backs up against it. I think they're sick and tired of losing to the Chiefs. Their window's only so much open, and they need defense. They need guys on defense there. I mean, you're probably looking at another guy who's a wide receiver for Josh Allen, or another pass catcher for Josh Allen in the draft. And then you're probably looking at D-line, linebacker, and secondary for that football team where you could go. Myles Garrett would be a distinct possibility. But damn it, I'm going to tell you right now, with the way Howie Roseman operates, I would think my first thought, and I know there's history there. I know Andrew Berry's there and his brother's there. But I would think that if he ends up a Philadelphia Eagle, my first thought is going to be a lump in my throat going, we didn't get it. We didn't get what we could have. And he just ended up with the Eagles. Because now, what were the other offers? Did we take, because we work with Howie Roseman. We work well in these trades.
Andrew Berry's brother is over there.
I'm going to have a lump in my throat.
His twin brother's over in Philly.
216-474-0092. So you brought it. I like the way you said it. Is the relationship severed already with Browns fans?
See, I don't think it is. It doesn't feel that way to me. I think people are annoyed at how it's getting here, and they were annoyed with the Browns at first. Then over the next few days and then the week in the Super Bowl, I think they then got further annoyed with Miles. But if tomorrow Miles was like, hey, I've agreed to sign a, you know, fully guaranteed whatever deal with the Cleveland Browns, $40 million a year, highest paid non-quarterback, all that stuff, I think fans would find it very easy to get back in his good graces, and or the other way around. And furthermore, I think they'd be a little excited about the plan that the Browns might have showed Miles, because they might think that that also went into it.
We bring in super friend of the show. She is from Cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. She is Mary Kay Cabot. Hello, Mary Kay. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How you doing?
Hi, Mary Kay.
Mary Kay, any chance Huntington Bank Field becomes Huntington Bank football playing surface? Now that we have Rocket Arena instead of Rocket Mortgage Field House.
I doubt it. I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
I think we're averaging a name change for our venues once a year on every venue. What do you think?
I don't think that's accurate.
Well, now we're 2 for 2, right? The ballpark.
Follow the money.
That's right. Follow the money.
There it is, Mary Kay. 100%. There it is. So, I like your story that you posted just a little while ago. Cam Ward vows to make teams who pass on him pay. We got another guy with a grudge already, Mary Kay. What's going on
here?
Good
job.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Cam Ward is that no one's really heard from him yet in this pre-draft process. We've heard plenty of things from Shedeur Sanders because he was at the East-West Shrine Bowl. We've heard and he was at the Super Bowl. And we've heard plenty of things from his dad, Dion. What we haven't heard much from is Cam Ward. And he did not go to the Shrine Bowl. He did not go to the Senior Bowl. He did not go to the Super Bowl. He was not running around Radio Row giving interviews and doing videos and all those kinds of things. So we haven't heard from Cam at all yet. And therefore, I think sometimes it almost feels like Shedeur has had all the momentum and is getting all the run. Well, that's probably about to change because now Cam has spoken up. And next week, we are all heading to the NFL Combine, where he will be interviewed all over national media, but all of us will be standing in front of him at a podium as well and interviewing him. So now it's time for Cam to sort of step up and take center stage. And I think he showed us in this interview last night that he means business.
Does it matter if he throws at the Combine or not?
No, I don't think it does matter if he throws at the Combine. I know teams really appreciate it and would love it if he did, but I don't think it's going to matter in the grand scheme of things because he will throw at his pro day at Miami, and he will throw at private workouts, not on those top 30 visits because they're not allowed to do that when they come into town, but when teams go out for a private visit, they're allowed to do that there. So he'll do plenty of throwing over the next couple of months, maybe not at the Combine.
Your thought has been that they take a quarterback at 2. You still feeling that way as you get ready to go to the Combine next week?
I am still feeling that way. I just don't see it any other way. I think you have to take a chance on one of these quarterbacks if you think that they can win. And I'm going by what I asked Andrew Berry at the Senior Bowl a couple of weeks ago, or now I guess 3-4 weeks ago, when I asked him, do you see a quarterback in this draft that can win? Do you see some winning quarterbacks in this draft? And he said, yes. Well, if there are those there and not just one, and you have a chance at them, then you have to take that chance. You have to write your ticket there and give it a shot. I don't think that you can go for a non-organization changing player at that position at number 2. You don't hope to be picking that high anytime soon again. So I would take the shot and build around the quarterback and see how it goes.
And do you believe said quarterback will be married with a veteran free agent a la Kirk Cousins?
Yes, I do think that a veteran free agent will come in here, or a trade, or someone. I don't know if it will end up being Kirk Cousins or someone else, but there's no doubt in my mind that there will be some kind of a bridge quarterback coming in here. I think they'll probably sign or acquire two veteran quarterbacks to go along with Shador or Cam. I think that could come from the pool of Kirk Cousins. You know, there are a number of quarterbacks in that category. I think what you have to be a little careful of is acquiring a veteran quarterback who really fancies himself as a starter who can take the team the distance. I don't think that's really going to serve you well if you are drafting a quarterback at number two who you know is going to start this season. So in my mind, that sort of eliminates the Aaron Rodgers. I don't know where that puts Kirk Cousins, because I know he feels like he can still start and win for a team in the NFL. So I don't know. I think it's a little bit tricky when you look at who you want to acquire as your veteran bridge.
There were little things floating around last week about Aaron Rodgers. I cannot see Aaron Rodgers in a Browns uniform. Could you?
Well, probably not, just because of what I just mentioned.
Yes.
The fact that if he's going to come back and play more football, he's not going to come back to mentor a rookie. I don't think he's at that point yet. I think in his second season out of Achilles surgery, I think he'll probably feel like he can play better football in 2025, and that if he's going to put himself out there and continue to play, it's not going to be to ride the bench.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us, plaindealercleveland.com. Myles Garrett made an awful lot of appearances during Super Bowl week. He was everywhere he wanted to be, and the more Myles spoke, the more it just seemed like everybody nationally assumed, well, he's going to be playing somewhere else next year. What's his new destination? How do you see this playing out?
Well, I do think that everyone jumped to the conclusion that the Browns were going to readily just acquiesce and trade him, and I just don't think that's the case. I think the Browns are going to exercise patience, let this play out some. I think we are obviously going to hear from Andrew Berry at the Combine when we get there next week, and he'll have more to say about this then. But I'm guessing he's probably going to say the same thing that he said to a few of us at the Senior Bowl, and the stance that the Browns have stood by since then, and that is that they're not trading him, not even if someone offers them two first-round picks. Now, I've seen things change. You can say something like that in 1 month, and 2 months later, you change your mind for some reason, for unforeseen circumstances. But I do believe at this point in time, they don't have any intentions of trading him, and I think they're going to hang on to that point for as long as they can.
Mary Kay, I think we're all assuming that next year is a must-win year for Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski. But I mentioned in our last segment, with Myles and all of this, I wonder what marching orders the Haslams have given to their front office. You know, like, we need to win this year. Or we understand that our roster needs some work. This is a building year. What do you think the Haslams have told the guys who are running the football team? And what do you think they have to do next year?
Well, I think that the answer is sort of somewhere in the middle. I think the marching orders are, and I don't even think they need marching orders. This is what Andrew and Kevin are going to want too, to go out in 2025 and to win as many games as they possibly can with their new quarterback, with their new pieces that they add to the team, with the core players that they still have on the team, and try to get back to winning as much winning as they can as soon as possible, while also restocking, retooling, and rebuilding a little bit for the future. But retooling and restocking doesn't mean that you're not trying to win as many games as you possibly can. And if you just stop turning the ball over and you get a running game and good, decent quarterback play, you're already going to be at 7 or 8 victories. So I just don't think that you have to go out there, and there's no such thing in my mind in today's NFL of tanking and rebuilding and tearing it all down. There's just no need to do that with all of the avenues that you have to keep a team competitive. The Steelers have never had a losing season in 18 years under Mike Tomlin. I think that should say a lot.
Mary Kay, you said you're off to the combine here in a little bit. I'm just curious, I'm like total fan question here. Just what do teams actually learn at the combine? And can anything be said for a player that doesn't want to do something or, you know, I think you're right about the, if you're going to work out in an individual session, why should you have to throw three times? Like the team's probably going to bring you in anyway if you're a high draft pick. So what do teams actually learn and what's the biggest benefit teams have from the combine? Is it just figuring out guys maybe later in the draft or bubble guys between free agents and sixth, seventh rounders? What do they learn?
Well, one of the biggest things that they learn at the combine is the culture fit and the personality of the player through the interviews. So those interviews that go until like 11 o'clock every night at the combine are vitally, vitally important. That is where you really start to get to know a player or continue to get to know a player, perhaps maybe before he comes in for your top 30 visit. So you've got several points at which you get to talk to these guys. Senior Bowl is one of them, East-West Shrine Game, then you've got the Combine, and then you've got your top 30 visits. So these are tremendous opportunities to sit face-to-face with the player and really dig in there and get your, team psychologist in there and coaches and personnel people and try to get into the mind, heart, and soul of a player, especially a quarterback. I mean, if it's going to be the player that is going to lead this team for the next how many ever years, you need to know what you're getting. So I think that's one of the biggest things you'll get out of it.
How active will this team be in free agency, Mary Kay?
I think they'll be somewhat active. I think they need to add maybe three or four key pieces in free agency, and then there will always be those three or four other sort of second or third tier players that you will acquire to bolster certain positions. But I think they can get three or four key pieces. I don't think they are necessarily going to go out and pursue the top three players in this free agency period because of the money situation that they're in right now. But I do think that they will find opportunities to fortify a position and bring in a couple of starters that will really help them.
I don't want to make this a weekly question. I'm still just wondering about Nick Chubb and how they're going to probably approach the draft with a running back, because there's plenty of good running backs out there, I think, in coming out of college. So just your thoughts on Nick and the running back position.
Well, there are two positions at which I would draft two players. Now, they're going to have, they've got their nine original picks, and they will have also, I think, as many as three compensatory picks. So with those 12 picks, I would actually be drafting two quarterbacks. I would take one at number two, and then I would take another one somewhere, wherever it seems to make sense. If you see one that got left behind by someone in the third round or the fourth round, I would snatch them up there, develop them, and if nothing else, then you have some trade bait or a good quarterback in the pipeline, maybe your future backup or something like that. So I would draft two quarterbacks, and I would draft two running backs. I would go for one sort of fast, shifty, multi-purpose, someone along the lines of a Jerome Ford, but someone else kind of like him that you can pair with him, but also more of the big bruising back that can get you those tough yards on the goal line and in short yardages and things like that. So I would be reshaping the running back room, and I would definitely be going for two.
Mary Kay, as always, we enjoy our conversation with you. Have a great week, and we look forward to talking a little bit more as we get closer to the combine. Should be a lot of fun. Hopefully, we get some answers when the team goes there as well. Thank you, Mary Kay.
Thanks, Mary Kay.
Thank you, guys.
Daryl, always a pleasure to have you here on Baskin and Phelps.
What's happening, guys?
How are you, buddy?
Much, bud.
I'm good. I'm trying to stay. It snowed again,
yeah,
and it's cold.
We're
actually having a winter.
Stop.
I told Jeff on the conference call this morning, I'm done. This is it. This is my breaking point. I'm done. I'm done with winter. I'm done with snow. I'm done with cold. I'm done with not seeing the sun.
Thanks, Daryl. You got him going. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm done.
Dan, way back in the day, this is how it used to be every winter. We're just not used to it because, well, we've had a lot of nice winters in recent years.
That's really true.
It's just one of those where it's going to turn into both of you starting to do the whole back of my day, uphill, both ways, no shoes, cold as molasses. bus would fall into the ditch and we'd lift it and shove it back up so we get to school before English.
Remember in 78, we had 4 feet of snow and we liked it.
Yeah. Kids get days off of school now if the temperature drops below freezing.
Isn't that true? Hey, there's going to be a cold breeze. Stay home, kids.
I mean, I'm not going to do the back in my day. I used to walk to school in a foot of snow up the hill with no boots. I'm not going to do that, but...
Anyhow.
Yeah. As tempting as it is.
I wonder if Matthew Stafford hated winter so much that he wouldn't want to come back to this part of the country.
Well, was winter indoors kind to him?
Well, he had to drive to the indoors, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm just saying, though. He got to actually play indoors, though.
He's the name that's out there right now, Daryl. All of a sudden, it's like, okay, Matthew Stafford's going to be available.
Yeah, we'll
Is
see.
He going to be available? Would he have an interest in the Browns, and would the Browns have an interest in him?
Well, I think the Browns have to have an interest in any quarterback that's available at this point, right? They're not doing their jobs if they don't express interest and do their due diligence and homework on these guys. I mean, they've got to find the best of the worst that's available this offseason to get them through this whatever transition, we'll call it, the 41st transition in franchise history since this team has come back, while they continue the never-ending search for a franchise quarterback. They should express interest in him, absolutely. As far as like what Stafford wants or what he, you know, wants to do, well, there's a chance he may not have a choice in the matter, right?
It's valid, Daryl.
Yeah.
Does the cap being a little higher than what people were thinking have any impact on what the Browns are looking to do in free agency?
I think that Andrew Berry's already mapped out his free agency plan going into the combine. And then you go there and you talk to the agents. And then in 3 weeks, we find out what was decided at the combine.
Yes.
That's usually how this works. Or is it 2 weeks?
At the bar at St. Elmo's between a shrimp cocktail.
Right, exactly. Or at Prime at 3 a.m. I think that he's got an idea of what he wants to do. Obviously, the salary cap news yesterday was great for him and the Browns. Barry has done a pretty good job just with his own internal projections of what those numbers are going to look like. So, you know, the folks that were really losing their minds over the Browns salary cap space, they're going to be fine. They'll restructure Deshaun. They'll restructure a couple of contracts, and boom, they'll have what they need to do to accomplish what Barry's looking to in free agency. It's why I really wasn't all that worried about it. Yeah, the fact that his cap number is so large and they're paying him what they're paying him to do basically nothing for them, you know, is problematic. But, you know, Barry knows how to work around and navigate all this stuff. So I'm not really concerned about that. I'm concerned about many other things, like finding the next quarterback, finding a franchise quarterback, and then filling the many holes that are on this roster.
You just mentioned juggling the cap and restructuring and everything else. We keep hearing, well, we've all taken the approach, and it seems like the Browns have as well. All right, you're going to draft somebody at quarterback, or you're going to sign a free agent at quarterback.
Yeah.
Do you think a trade for a quarterback is a legitimate option, Daryl?
No, I think it's too tough to do.
Okay.
Because of the cap, because you assume that contract and the cap the ramifications that come with the contract in its existing form, barring a restructure. And last time I checked, I don't think a lot of players, not just quarterbacks, but players in general, are willing to take less money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that the route is they will draft a quarterback, they will sign one or two quarterbacks, but those quarterbacks are going to come here on team-friendly salaries. You know what I mean? And I think that that's why the Kirk Cousins thing makes sense, because he's getting his money from the Atlanta Falcons, right? And then gets released. And so, yeah, you could sign him probably for the veteran minimum, because he got his money, right? And those are the type of things that Andrew Berry has to be cognizant of, which he is. I'm not saying he's not. He is, obviously. But those are the things that he has to think about as he goes through this process, because you can't go out and spend another $35 million on a quarterback this offseason. You can't do it. And I'm talking about an annual salary. You know, if you did a $35 million contract over multiple years, that's a different story. But you can't go out and pay someone $35 million per year to come in here and start for this football team. You're going to need somebody who's making in the veteran minimum to $5, $6 million range. Maybe you throw some incentives or whatnot in there. But no, I think trading for a quarterback is a lot. I won't ever say anything's impossible, but I think it's much more difficult to do.
Our Cleveland sports reporter, Daryl Ryder, joining us in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Badge Rim Hotline. Of course, all of his hits are powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. Daryl, is it a foregone conclusion that the Browns are going to restructure Deshaun Watson's contract, lower that so that they have more room?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
And then what's going to happen is everybody's going to lose their minds, right? I mean, remember what they did in the fall when everyone lost their minds? It's going to happen again. They're probably going to restructure another 2 to 3 times before it's all said and done, because what Andrew Berry is rightfully calculating is the escalation of the cap. You're talking a $20 to $25 million increase from last year to this year, right? They were going into the offseason some $30-plus million over the cap. Now that number's 10. Well, you do a restructure of Deshaun. That saves you about 30. Oh, what do you know? Just that. Now you're all at 10, 20 million under the salary cap, and you're perfectly fine. Restructure a couple other contracts, you're even more under the salary cap. I mean, they rolled over last year, I believe it was around $40 million, if I remember correctly off the top of my head. Like, they rolled over, I think, the most money of anybody in cap room. So salary cap maintenance is not Andrew Berry's problem. Picking players that can come in here and win games, that's a different conversation. But managing the cap, that's not an issue. And that's why I really have not been all that concerned about the status of the cap.
Daryl Ryder's joining us. He's our Browns beat reporter. Any new rumblings on your favorite defensive end in mine?
Well, other than every Buffalo reporter that covers the team saying that the Bills placed a call to the Browns and made an offer?
I was on a Buffalo radio station. Oh, they were giddy. They were giddy.
Well, what's interesting is I don't care where they trade Miles, because I am of the belief that this football team is not close to contention. Okay, so I don't view trading him to the Bills. Trade him to the Chiefs for all I care. I just don't feel like that all of a sudden that's a roadblock for the Browns. The roadblock from the Browns is they don't have a very good football team. They're the worst team in the division again, and they got a long way to go to get back to the playoffs. So I don't care where you trade him. Now, odds are he gets traded to an NFC team, because the Browns do think that they're close. They do feel like that with a couple of moves this offseason, they can get back to the playoffs. I respectfully disagree with that notion, but that's I'm just telling you where the organization is and how they feel about the state of this roster. They feel they're close. I disagree, but that's how they feel, and they're welcome to that. I think they're a little delusional, but that's okay. But, you know, I think Washington, Detroit make the most sense to trade Miles, but it's all about best package. I mean, there's only three teams I would not consider trading Miles Garrett to. And that's the Steelers, the Ravens, and the Bengals. Everybody else, come with your best offer, right? You know, Andrew Berry's job is to get the best possible package for him. Now, to be fair, the Browns are very, very clear they're not trading Miles Garrett.
Do you believe that, by the way?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I think that, of course they're going to say that publicly, right? But I think, again, Andrew has to at least answer the phone. And that could also be code for, if you're going to call us, make sure it's with a purpose and that it's worth my time. You know, don't be calling us offering a couple of second-round picks or something like that, right? Because I think Miles should get you at least 2 first-round picks plus, and then some, right? But I think ultimately you do trade him. I think the more I think about the situation, it's in their best interest long-term to trade him. They're not winning with him, right?
I love the concept of, boy, I wonder what you could get, and then what you could do with that to help your team. But I also really love the idea of having a Hall of Fame talent at defensive end. So
I know, but unfortunately, the Hall of Fame talent doesn't want to be here.
Well, apparently not.
Yeah, and you
do think it's more about that and not about money, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. I also think it's about legacy. Because let's be honest about it. That's going back to that statement that was released the Monday of Super Bowl week, right? The whole line about the goal's not, it was never to go from Cleveland to Canton or what? Yeah, it was. That was a goal when he first came into the league, along with Defensive Player of the Year and a couple other things. But he does have a point. The great ones are remembered for winning. Joe Thomas is the exception to the rule. He was so great at his position, it didn't matter that he blocked for 25 quarterbacks and the Browns never had a winning season with him here, right? But I think with, from where Miles is coming from, part of it's about money, Jeff. When it comes to the Browns. Like, okay, this offseason, I'm due for the pay raise with 2 years left on my deal. But I don't want to stay in Cleveland if I have no chance to compete. I don't want to commit to the Browns if they're not really committed to winning. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that the Cleveland Browns are not committed to winning, because that's completely unfair. The method in which they're going about being committed to winning, I disagree with. I don't think it's working, and they need to shake things up a little bit. But they are trying to win. They're spending money to win. They're not getting the return on their investment. So, if you can get assets, and this is the key, that you can flip into better players to sprinkle into the rest of the roster to build a team, rather it be Myles Garrett, Denzel Ward, and the rest of the defense, and, David Njoku, Jerry Jeudy, Wyatt Teller, maybe or maybe not, Joel Bitonio, depending on what he decides to do, and the rest of the offense, right? Because there's a lot of holes they need to fill, and trading Myles Garrett could give them the assets that they need to be able to do that, but then you have to make the assumption that they're going to convert those assets into quality players that are going to help elevate the roster, and that's the rub in this whole thing, because historically, especially when it comes to the draft, the Browns don't do that especially well. They don't miss all the time, but they do miss the majority of the time.
Speaking of players that, I don't know, maybe I would call it a hit. He's been fine. But Greg Newsom is playing on the fifth-year option of his rookie contract.
I would count him as a hit, Dan.
I think so, yeah.
I'm not going to sit here and say that Greg Newsom's a bust. No, absolutely not. No, it was a hit, yeah.
I agree with you. I think he's going to have a 10-year career in this league. The question I have, though, is he going to have a 10-year career in this league playing for the majority of it for the Browns, or is he going to have another 5 years on top of that, possibly playing for somebody else?
Well, and this is, again, where it comes down to where the Browns evaluate him, right? Do they view him strictly as a nickel corner, a package player? He wants to play outside and be in every down corner. Does that ambition of his mesh with the Browns' vision, right? I think Mary Kay wrote the story something to the effect of, he wants to be in Cleveland, but he also wants to be on the field more to help the team, right? And that's great, that's admirable, but it depends if the Browns believe that he can do that, right? So I think he is an interesting player to watch this offseason as far as a potential trade, and especially with whatever they decide to do in the draft, because Denzel Ward only has so much tread left on his tires. There's questions about Greg Newsom. Remember, Andrew Berry has the philosophy, and it's a good philosophy, there's no such thing as enough good corners, right? And this is a good draft to get some cornerbacks. So I think he's going to be an interesting player to watch this offseason. And if they do move him, then that tells you no, the Browns did not see him as an every down type of cornerback. They viewed him as a specialty type of corner that they're not going to pay starting cornerback money to, if that makes sense.
There's rumblings, and they're coming out of Pittsburgh,
Oh, boy. Hang on. I need to sit down for this, Jeff.
Yeah.
Because you said they're coming out of Pittsburgh, and I have an idea where you're going with this. So, yeah, go ahead.
That the Steelers have an interest in signing Nick Chubb.
Okay.
Tell me that one. tell me that's not going to happen. Please just tell me.
Mr. Chubb, as Mike Tomlin would say.
Well, we all know Mike Tomlin's admiration and respect that he has for Chubb.
It's yes, unquestioned. Sure.
I would hope not, but, I mean, Joe Hayden was a Pittsburgh Steeler.
Yeah, but the Browns cut him.
I know, but I'm just saying, well, you know.
Dan Fike.
Did I hear it correctly? Did Ken Carmen say this morning he'll pay whatever it costs to keep Nick Chubb away from the Steelers?
I do not know.
Okay.
If he did, Ken's got a lot of disposable income.
Yeah, because there is, you do have to, I understand where you'd be coming from there, but you also have to, you got to be smart about how you spend your dollars.
Yeah.
And I would hope that Nick Chubb does not sign with the Steelers, but, you know, if the Browns don't re-sign him and he becomes a free agent, right? I mean, you're free to go wherever you want.
You can go anywhere that they want you.
And if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers and you've watched Nick Chubb run you over with regularity over the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years, I'd want to sign the guy too, right?
All right, D. Thank you, buddy.
Stretch before you shovel. Don't pull anything. It's not worth it.
That's a good idea. Thank you, Daryl.
You bet, guys. Have a great week.
Daryl Ryder, our Browns beat reporter, is brought to us by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store.
I know there's a lot of people frustrated with me because I'm so negative and down on the Browns right now. But the reason I'm so negative and down on the Browns is because they won 3 games last year.
Yeah.
They were supposed to be a playoff team. They were supposed to be a Super Bowl contender. They won 3.
Yeah. Okay. And they legitimately thought they were a Super Bowl contender, too. It's not
and not only did they just win 3 games,
yeah,
they got the boots put to them in most of the games.
Yeah.
They weren't even competitive in these games. And so that's why I'm sitting here. Don't tell me how close you are. You're not close. You're delusions of grandeur right now if you think that this football team is a quarterback away or they're close, because they're not. And I'm always going to be honest with fans, whether you like what I have to say or not. I had some nice exchanges on X this morning because I'm not crazy about the idea of spending the number 2 pick in the draft on one of these quarterbacks. I don't think that they're worthy of the pick.
Although you have come around to Cam Ward throughout the show.
I'm not going to feign shock and surprise if one of these guys is picked, because I think there's a very good possibility it's going to happen. Do I think it's the smartest decision in the world? Probably not. But, okay, I'm willing to be open-minded.
The differentiator right there is important, right? The idea that what you would do isn't necessarily what the right. Browns wound up doing. I think that makes it very hard for a lot of these conversations, is because a lot of the times those interests don't necessarily align.
Right, so, but I'm not going to sit here and sell fans on they're a quarterback away. If they get the quarterback right this offseason,
what are you expecting with free agency out of them, though? Because, again, there's so many different paths that they could take. If we're playing with the idea that they're trying to be competitive next year instead of the idea that they're just going to lay down and die, essentially, if they're trying to be competitive next year, what exactly do they do in free agency? How aggressive are they?
Well, I think they're going to be aggressive. They're always aggressive.
That's Andrew Berry's motto, is to be aggressive. That's one thing I like about Andrew Berry, by the way. I rip on Andrew Berry. I've called for him to be fired. I do love the idea that Andrew Berry won't just sit back and say, I'm happy being a 5-win team.
Right. I think that long term, they're better off realizing what they have, and it's not much. And they should be building, not to make themselves look good or save their jobs. Because honestly, I don't think their jobs are in jeopardy.
But we don't know how what the length is, I think I would argue.
But they just got contract extensions, and you just kept your job after winning 3 games.
Yeah.
Okay? That was an unmitigated disaster. That was also, by the way, the happiest 3-win locker room I've ever been in.
Oh, were they happy?
Well, you'd expect the whole locker room to be grumpy and in foul moods.
I mean, I was grumpy in foul moods. Now, why can't they be grumpy and in foul moods?
Now, understand when I say happy, I'm not saying that they were thrilled with the results.
Don't miss. I'm just saying that, you know, guys didn't have bad attitudes. Guys weren't angry. You didn't have guys throwing stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
okay, when you said happy, I did think that they were like throwing, you know, parties and such, right. And you know, mariachi bands in the locker room with, you know, all sorts of food and everything like that.
Well, no, but when I say happy is like they all had great attitudes. They took it in stride. Like they, it felt like
basically described a Cinco de Mayo in my head is what happened. I don't know why.
It felt like they were resigned to their fate and like, we'll come back next year.
Well, in many ways, that's kind of where the fan base did end up getting to, is it didn't feel like they had a chance anyway.
Right. Show me. Tell me what you got this offseason.
But you do expect them to be aggressive then. I'm curious in what ways. Like, do you think they're going to be, are they going to add a double-digit sack guy? Are they going to add to the wide receiver room? What exactly are they going to do?
I think that they believe they're closer than I believe they are. And for me, that's an issue.
I mean, because part of this is, it's not necessarily trying to sell Myles Garrett that you've done things and you made changes. Like, if you do nothing in free agency, you are waving the white flag in that thought process.
Here's the thing. They have to trade Myles Garrett before the new league year. He's got option bonuses that are due that would raise his dead cap figure.
Is that better than him after June 1st? Because you can spread it out from this year and next year?
But I'm saying, though, his cap goes up the new league year and he's paid his bonuses.
For sure, yeah.
So they either have to wait. They either have to do it before.
I keep thinking after June 1st is more likely because you can just spread it out over the 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm very realistic about where they're at. They're not close. They think they're close, so I think they're going to act like they're contenders. Andrew Berry's going to operate this offseason as if they're contenders, coming off a 3-win season.
Yeah.
And so I anticipate that he's going to be aggressive. I anticipate he'll spend some money. Deshaun's contract's going to get restructured for the 27th time since they did this contract to get him under the cap. He's going to restructure a couple other contracts to open up the room that he needs to be able to sign, bring some guys in. My object, Jimmy Haslam, basically gives Andrew Berry a blank checkbook. Listen, they spent over $300 million last year.
Yeah.
It's one of the most expensive teams in NFL history. They won 3 games.
I do wonder at what point Haslam shuts off the money faucet. I do wonder at what point he just is like, all right, even you can't sell me on what's going on right now.
I don't think he will.
I think he's very desperate to make this thing a winner.
I don't know if I would use the word desperate, but I understand where you're coming from. He's driven to win.
That's a better word.
He wants to win at all costs, okay?
Yeah, and it's one thing I've always given him credit for, and I really do think we need to acknowledge more. Yes, it hasn't worked out very well, obviously, but this is a different Haslam, in my opinion.
He's had points where he has tried to take a step back and let the people he's hired do their jobs,
yeah.
And then the people he hired didn't do their jobs, and so they feel like they got to step back in again. Like, To be fair to the ownership of the team, they do want to win no matter the cost.
Yeah,
they're just as angry and frustrated about the lack of results as fans are. That's why I will never hear arguments of, well, the Haslams are just pocketing the money from fans. I will never listen to that argument. They do want to win out there. They're just as frustrated as to why they haven't been able to deliver what they want to deliver, and that's a consistent winner. And they're willing to spend whatever it takes, whether it's on facilities, whether it's on players, whatever, right? So there's a real commitment there. But the problem is, and the reason they get so much grief, is because the team has been terrible for much of their ownership. They've had 2 good seasons since this family has taken this team over in the middle of the 2012 season. They've had 2 winning seasons, 2 good seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those seasons, nobody was allowed around the football team.
Yeah.
And I would argue that's the best season this franchise has had in decades. I don't know. Maybe a lesson to be learned there. They clearly didn't learn that lesson. But, you know, the second to last year, or this last time where they went 11-6, I mean, they got lucky in the face of not getting lucky.
Yeah, and all the advanced analytics, too, by the way, had said that they probably should have been around a 500 team, even with everything Joe Flacco was
and
doing.
And I think the mistake that Andrew Berry made last year, last offseason, is he ran it back. Okay, we added Jerry Jeudy. We're good to go.
Yeah, they didn't look into, for such an analytical team, they didn't look into some of the obvious analytics that suggested that they had a lot of luck that played into their record.
They went
6-2
and 2-1 score games.
Yeah.
Okay? And then this year, they went 2-4. They were only good enough to play in
at least one score games. We'll have an acknowledgement, though. But, no, but at least we'll have an acknowledgement, though, from them that they can't just run it back from last year to this year. But so we're going to see them shaking the snow globe a little bit.
Yeah, but think about that. They were only good enough to play in 6-1 score games this past season out of 17 games. That's why they're not close.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they only won two of them.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Chiefs went, what, 13-0 in one score games this year?
Yeah.
And there's a lot you can really parse out in that. But that's an unfair comment by me.
Do you kind of get the picture of why I feel they really are far away?
I don't hate you being in prove-it mode. I think that's actually a very healthy way to look at it. You're in you have to show me. And that show me might take a little bit more time. By the way, Daryl today brought to you by our friends over there at Scheibman Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. One more segment left to play with you guys in case we missed it. Comes your way next right here on The Fan.
From something that was exhausting but also good because we're moving into our forever home to something that is exhausting and just not good, there was the report out of 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh that I believe this happened on their show yesterday. Jeff Hathorn, who's going to join us at 4:20 today, sports director for Odyssey Pittsburgh, saying that the Steelers have interest in Nick Chubb this offseason, and I don't think you could mention words that were more upsetting to Browns fans than that idea right there.
If you wanted to kick the hornet's nest, that was the easy way to do it.
Yeah, did we? This definitely felt like something that needed to happen now, because if this happens during Combine Week, we're going to have so many different things. We're not fully going to be able to process how upset this would make us if Nick Chubb were to sign in Pittsburgh. I don't know, like, outside of, like, Joe Thomas going to Pittsburgh, unretiring, and just being like, I just really like Mike Tomlin. I just want to see how the other half lives. Yeah. Outside of that, I don't think you could name a player that going to a specific destination would upset us more. Yeah?
Yeah, but I also, and listen, I don't think this is why Mike Tomlin would do it. They have a lot of running back problems right now because Jaylen Warren, they put on the restricted tender. Najee Harris isn't very good at football, Nick.
Yeah.
They know it, and the rest of the league knows it as well.
He is what, and here's the other thing. People around the around football think higher of Najee Harris than the Pittsburgh Steelers do. Most people who watch him are like,
I can't find a Steelers fan that likes him at all.
Like, he's an okay average back.
He just gets a lot of touches is all it is. He's not very good. He just gets a lot of touches. And that's really what Tomlin's been able to do for a lot of these running backs. You'll get 1,000 yards from scrimmage. It's just because you get the opportunities.
Yeah. And I actually, like, so from the logistics side of things, Nick Chubb with Jaylen Warren really works.
Yeah.
Like, you could do
in a running back by committee.
A lot of the similar stuff that you're going to try and do with Jerome Ford and Nick Chubb, if you bring Nick Chubb back, would be what they would try and do with Nick Chubb and Jaylen Warren. And the difference is, he would do it in a town that would just crush us to see him in.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, I have pinged back and forth on this. I'd be mad. If Nick Chubb signed in Pittsburgh, I'd be mad at Nick Chubb.
Oh, you see, I wouldn't be at all. I mean, at that point, the Browns would have essentially kicked him to the curb. He's got the unemployment sign up. Why can he not go anywhere he wants to go?
Because it's Pittsburgh. It's the place where cheap-ass Minkah Fitzpatrick ended maybe the prime of his career. Two, he's Batman, and I think Batman has to know his limitations. And I think he
does. He
has
turn
to
into
understand.
The Joker if he's all of a sudden in Pittsburgh, or do we turn him into? Or does he actually go to Bane? Because wasn't Bane with the movie on the actual Heinz Field? Is what I was trying to say.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
The point. Why would it upset you from a Nick Chubb discussion?
Because he could sign with 30 other NFL teams.
I don't know that 30 other teams love him the way that Mike Tomlin will. By the way, I mean he calls him Mr. Chubb, which we do know is reserved for people that Tomlin thinks very high of.
And people that have spent some amorous time with Nick Chubb.
But if anybody's going to live in the glory days of Nick Chubb that they feel they can get a 30-year-old running back to his prime, it's going to be somebody that is in the division that watched it firsthand twice a year and throughout the stretch that was Nick Chubb, where he's putting up Hall of Fame numbers.
And he could literally sign anywhere else.
I'm not putting that on him. No, no, no.
Yes,
he's got the unemployment sign wrapped around his neck. He needs to go ahead and get a job. That's not on you. That's on the Browns for letting you walk out the door.
I'm not telling you that I wouldn't have massive ire for the Browns For because here's the thing.
When you need a job, your loyalty goes out the window, Nick.
Well, yeah. No. Not when I think. I actually think there's going to be more of a market at a limited cost. Like if Nick Chubb is closer to, not vet min, but somewhere in the low millions, $2, $3 million, I think there's going to be a fair amount of teams that look at him and go, all right, well, he's 2 years removed from the injury. They didn't have a good offensive line in Cleveland last year. We've got a better O-line. We've got a better this, that. Let's go ahead and bring him in. Worst case scenario, it doesn't work out.
Maybe we disagree on the amount of teams then that would be involved in the Nick Chubb sweepstakes.
I'm going to say 6.
Okay, that's different than 30 other teams, though. You brought it at 30 to begin with.
Well, I guess hypothetically, literally sign with any other team other than Pittsburgh.
But are 6 teams in for a 30-year-old running back coming off the second major knee surgery of his career? And last year, when he did play, wasn't particularly good.
$2 to $3 million.
I think
probably
a lot of people believe the glory days for Nick Chubb are behind them. I mean, now it only takes a couple teams to get in a bidding war. But if it's like the Steelers as one team, Steelers team that a lot of people believe could be fringe postseason, is that being kind to them? And then, I don't know, throw a random team in there like the Raiders.
I was going to say the Rams.
Sure.
I don't know why the Rams make a lot of sense because they have Kyren Williams, but the name popped up in my head.
But I'm talking like a lesser team. Let's talk about a team that maybe isn't a fringe playoff team. Is Nick Chubb just supposed to go to that other team to save face?
Yeah. No.
For Browns fans?
Because he should know his place in Cleveland Browns history. He should know.
If he respects that so much, then if the Browns don't offer him something, I guess the only other option would be to retire then.
I mean, I think if Nick Chubb is making $2 to $3 million this year, I assume he's going to make it in Cleveland. I think the only way Nick probably isn't back next year, and this is my guess, it's not my report, but my guess is that somebody went above and beyond $2 to $3 million, which doesn't strike me as Pittsburgh. That strikes me as a team that is bad and needs star power, needs relevance, needs maybe an adult in the room, and wants to add somebody on a $4 to $5 million range.
Yeah, the restricted tender they put on Warren was in like the $3.5 million range. I agree with you. I don't think they want to spend a lot of money, but if the difference is the Browns spending peanuts and them spending $3 million, Nick Chubb, oddly enough, has only made like $35 million in his career.
I just think you have to know what you mean to Browns fans. You have to understand, if you went to Pittsburgh, what that would feel like for Browns fans. And by the way, it's not just one spot. There are 2 spots. You can go to Cincinnati, and I don't think people are going to go ahead and stomp their feet and get furious. But if you go to Pittsburgh or Baltimore, specifically Pittsburgh, especially because of the Minka Fitzpatrick stuff, I think it would be okay to be angry with Nick Chubb in that scenario, which is approximately why I don't think it would happen, by the way.
Nick, if you're listening right now, I give you the Peterlin pass. From my perspective, do we have a sounder for the Peterlin pass? Can we make this official?
It's the Peterlin pass!
The Peterlin pass.
No, but you sounded like Mickey Mouse now.
I know. I
watch a lot of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse now. My daughter loves it. You sounded just like Mickey Mouse.
I tried to save it and then couldn't.
Because
I didn't realize. There's a little Howard Dean to it. But I didn't realize. I didn't realize we had a Peterlin Pass thing, or I would have just.
Oh, yeah.
The Peterlin Pass.
Yeah, Nick Chubb, you got it. You signed for the most amount of money you possibly need to sign. I won't be upset with you at all because the Browns already gave you the. They showed you the door. At this point, you hit the unemployment line. Go get a job. And if it's with Tomlin and you get to go to the postseason, how can I be mad at you for that?
Is he starving? Is there like
in the NFL world? I feel like he's starving more than you think.
Did he
is.
Get Jack Johnson, where his family siphoned off all his money, and he's got to play until he's 90? Is that what happened?
What Jack Johnson biography were you watching?
No, I'm talking about Jack Johnson, the hockey player, not the
singer,
not the Dave Matthews ripoff.
Okay,
that hurt some people out there, but you needed to be hurt. but you're not hurting. Meaning, like I.
He might be. He's a 30-year-old running back coming off his second major surgery. He might be hurting.
If Nick Chubb comes out after signing with Pittsburgh and says it was either signing in Pittsburgh or retirement, then you will get the Peterlin pass. If it was the difference between signing in Pittsburgh or signing with the Dolphins or literally any other team, the Toronto Argonauts. Now, I'm just kidding. I mean, that's the CFL. Yeah, I'm sorry. I will have a bit of a problem.
ESPN came out with their top 50 free agents list the other day. Nick Chubb wasn't on the list for a reason. He's not... We love Nick Chubb, but I think we love the glory days of Nick Chubb, which is exactly what Tomlin's going to sink his teeth into as well. He's going to sink his teeth into the idea that he remembers how great Nick Chubb was, and he's going to think he can get back there. I don't know that a team like Raiders, anyone else you throw in the mix, will feel that same way.
I think you're selling a fight there. I think plenty of teams.
But I also think he looks at what happened with the Steelers running backs, and I could say I can look good because they made two running backs that really aren't great last year have 1,000 yards from scrimmage. And, like, this is what Tomlin does with these running
and
backs.
And I'm saying his thought process should never even get there. His thought process should be, oh, the Pittsburgh Steelers called. That's nice of them.
He's got to look out for himself.
What about Buffalo? What about New England? What about literally any other team in the NFL not named Pittsburgh or Baltimore?
Najee Harris should be on the street. He should not be playing football. He averages 3.8 yards per carry.
Yeah, he sucks. You
and I agree. He gets like 1,000 yards from scrimmage every year because Mike Tomlin just lets him do that.
And
gives him opportunities. That's what Nick Chubb would want.
Let's just be a little honest here. I know Mike Tomlin respects Nick Chubb. There would be 12% of that signing would be out of spite 12%. And trolling for Cleveland Browns fans.
Yeah,
it's just on the no-fly list, right? Like, there are just certain people.
A little too dirty pool for you?
Yeah, it's the dirtiest of pool. Cannot happen. And listen, I'm not here to tell you that I would not also unleash holy hell on the Cleveland Browns for letting it happen. But this would be the one case. If Nick Chubb signed in Cincy, wouldn't care. Nick Chubb signed anywhere but Cleveland, or anywhere but Pittsburgh or Baltimore, I'd be like, man, I'm going to root for that dude until the wheels come off, till he retires, whatever. I'll root for him in any scenario. I'll root for him in Kansas City.
So that's what
I'll
this
root
is.
For him.
You just want to stay rooting for Nick Chubb. That's what this is.
Yes, 100%. I get that.
And if he's wearing a Steelers uniform, you can't do that. But I feel like he's earned it enough to go to a situation that would be best for his career. And the Steelers situation, again, they turned bad running backs into 1,000 yards from scrimmage in the snap of a fingers. It'd be in the best interest of Nick Chubb to do this.
That's not the only place. You can go to a Shanahan team. All right, you can go to Houston, where they're going to run the same similar setup to Cleveland. And you're going to be able to rush for 1,000 yards. San Francisco.
Split carries with Joe Mixon.
San Francisco. Christian McCaffrey coming off injury. Go get some Chubb touches down there in San Francisco. There's plenty of places to rehab your career that aren't named Pittsburgh.
Well, we'll see if they show interest. Right now, the Steelers are the only team that has shown interest in Nick Chubb.
Because Jeff, we need to go to Odyssey Insiders across
the board. Have you seen a bunch of other reports of this? I haven't seen any other reports. It's very convenient, by the way, that it's the Steelers with the only report we've seen on it, but it's the only report we've seen on it.
216-474-0092. Who would you be angrier with if Nick Chubb signed in Pittsburgh? Nick Chubb or the Cleveland Browns? We got quick hits coming up at 2:40. We've got Jeremy Piven, actor, stand-up comedian, coming up at 3. Big sports fan. Knower of Baker Mayfield. We'll get his thoughts on his shows coming up here in the Cleveland area. Also, whether his Bears are a good fit for Myles Garrett. We'll see maybe a little tradio there. We also have Jeff Hathorn, sports director for Odyssey Pittsburgh at 4:20. And then at 5:20, Dan Favalli, NBA writer and reporter for the Bleacher Report. He has decidedly ranked your Cleveland Cavaliers as a contender or pretender. We'll ask which one. We'll also ask about the Javonte Green edition. But as we get started on the show, Jeff Hathorn, who will join us at 4:20, he put it out there that the Steelers have some interest in Nick Chubb. Who would you be angrier with if Nick Chubb signed in Pittsburgh, Chubb or the Browns themselves? And this was true about the Browns and Nick Chubb 5 weeks ago. It's still true today. That's coming up in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.